You are listening to Angry Indian Radio, the podcast of the Aboriginal Press News Service.
Find us on the web, ang-newswire.blogspot.com.
You are listening to the Angry Indian Intelligent Aboriginal Radio.
This is Intelligent Aboriginal Radio, and you are listening to Intelligent Talk Radio for the masses. We've been hearing a lot about Femin lately. I don't want to say too much about Femin, because I've been hearing that from a lot of men, and I don't think it's fair. I think that Femin actually has a point, but one of the problems that some of the editors at the Aboriginal Press News Service have is that the idea of feminism, by their own written statements, seem to be centered upon a Western European concept. Even though these people are Ukrainian, the founders are Ukrainian, it seems to be based upon a Western European concept of what women should be struggling for. And as someone who is fairly keen on the work of Simone de Beauvoir and other feminists that I consider to be very on from Europe, I don't see anything in what they've written that cottons on to what Femin is actually pushing. So, you know, I'm a male. I don't feel that it's right or proper for me to speak about this other than the political controversy that I see. But for the inner gist of what's going on, we have Sunny Singh on the line here. She's the editor of Sunny Singh Online. She's one of the better writers that I've seen lately. And I really think you need to check her out at sunnysinghonline.blogspot.com. She was born in Varanasi, India. She's speaking to us from London right now. But, you know, I really wanted to ask her, as a journalist, as a teacher, as someone who works as an executive for various multinationals, she comes into contact with men from around the world all the time. And, you know, what are the opinions of a real activist of color who deals on an international level, not just with activism, but within her working life, to look at what's happening with Femin and the controversy that's going on between feminism in the West, feminism in the East, feminism in the Americas, feminism in Africa. As a male, I really don't know where to go sometimes, because a lot of it is contradictory, a lot of it is confusing, and the lines between where is colonial, where it's empirical, and where is simply gender bias are really becoming blurred. So we're going to bring Sunny in to try to help us suss this out, because it is very confusing for those males, for, you know, I like to say people like myself who want to help, who want to understand what's going on, but at the same time, you know, are very not sure what to make of the debate, because we're not females, we don't live that life, and we're really not in a position. And what I don't like from a lot of men is to judge. Sunny Singh, welcome to Intelligent Aboriginal Radio.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. I will just start off by just thinking about feminism in general, and I think you raised some interesting points about how do men react to it, especially how do men of color react to feminism when often it is seen as something that is being exported alongside wonderful concepts like democracy and so on and freedom from primarily Western nations, with most of them having a history of colonial exploitation around the world. So I think feminism in itself is often seen quite with a great deal of suspicion by not only women of color in living in Western countries, but elsewhere around the world. Some of it is unfortunately linked to feminism's own problems. The feminist movement on both sides of the Atlantic, in Europe and America, was primarily white middle-class women fighting and struggling for specific rights. Once you try to universalize that experience, to begin to be blind to the ideas that women elsewhere have very different experiences, different aspirations and struggles. Now, as somebody who's lived around the world, I'm from India, I grew up with very strong women. And yet, when I was a university student in America, I realized that their experiences were not compatible with what my professors talked of as feminist thinking or feminist action. Now, by itself, that kind of blindness turned me off from the idea of feminism. I never wavered from my support for women's equality in terms of equal pay, right to free decisions in terms of education, work, ability to control their own bodies in terms of contraception, healthcare, so on. But I really had to think about where I stood vis-a-vis the idea of feminism as a movement or philosophy. And I think a lot of women of color are find themselves in a very similar situation. And I think Bell Hooks is one of the people who has been very, very articulate in thinking out the problems that come up for women of color, and not only within America or Europe, but elsewhere, when it comes to issues like feminism. And feminine is yet another manifestation of a very top-down, Western imposed idea of a so-called shock tactics of feminism, whatever that may be, being imposed and exported elsewhere, which frankly ignores and if not entirely erases my agency as a woman of color, my aspirations, my struggles, my experience, and assumes that I somehow need to be saved. Saved, interestingly enough, from my own men. So the patriarchy, as for women, is represented by men of color, not indeed by the white men who are running governments and corporations in New York and London and Washington, D.C., and exporting all sorts of problems to, you know, cultures around the world, whether it's weaponry, whether it's political hegemony, whether it's economic exploitation. So that sort of very simplistic logic of, which is frankly been historically exploitative, and not just for feminism, but even before, is a very problematic one. It also erases, fluidities of other sexuality. So what about women who do not fit this wonderful, blonde, beautiful, skinny paradigm? In Brazil, for example, there have been enough experiences of women saying that the group wanted to audition visually who could participate in the protest. So apparently Brazilian women who didn't fit the archetype of beauty as for women weren't allowed to protest. Those are very, very problematic areas with great long history that doesn't set often, and quite spectacularly with histories of colonialism.
Yeah, because the colonial aspect, of course, is what, I feel that men need to really concentrate on in how we're being swayed. Now, I was really hammered during the Libyan revolt, the Libyan uprising, the Libyan invasion, depending on how you want to look at it. Because when the woman who broke into the eating area of the hotel, Iman Abidi, I can't remember her name right now, but
yes,
I wrote a
hello, baby.
Yeah, I wrote a piece where I really wasn't, questioning her, but I was questioning the timing and what have you, and the political use of this, because women in the West will only seem, liberal white women, and again, this is just an observation, only seem to pick and choose which cases overseas that they'll be interested in. Now, in the piece that I wrote, which you can't find anymore, it's been removed from the internet, Now Rape Matters in Africa, I tried to point out that from one end of Africa to the other, women have been abused in terms of, sexual terrorism. And no one in the West said anything. I could not find anybody to talk about this. Even during Rwanda, it was not really discussed until terms came around after the film was released. And, look at Rwanda and think about the women. No one said anything about the women while it was going on. White feminists in the West supported the invasions of Iraq and Afghanistan, saying that this would improve the lives of the women. They were saying the same thing about Libya. But when it was politically expedient for them to excuse certain military actions, certain political actions, sanctions and what have you, rape matters. Abuse against women matters.
Yes, when I agree. But I think there's a long history of using women's bodies and crimes against women, especially in colonial areas and colonial territories, for political gain. Let's not forget that even Dietary Spivak has written quite extensively about the colonial British strategy against apparently something, which was a very small practice, but it was actually turned into saving Indian women even as far back as the 19th century. Mm. All records that you have of that is never from any of the women who practiced this, but only from colonial sources and only about saving them. Even today, you see Western media constantly, and often right-wing American media, recycling images, for example, of Kabul in 1973 with women dressed in skirts and Western-style clothes, and contrasting them with photographs of burqa and women in burqa today in Kabul, with absolute no understanding that in 73, the Kabul we were talking about was primarily Soviet influence and very much within the Soviet area of influence. And that regime was brought down by Western intervention, which eventually led to the Soviet-Afghan War. So, you know, there's this sort of amnesia and there's a sort of partial blindness in terms of how we look at women, crimes against women. But I think I want to bring this back to feminine again. And the sort of this idea of the bare bodies and the naked protest. Mm. One of the things feminine completely ignores is that Africa has a very long history of women and naked protest by women.
Mm-hmm.
We go back to 100 years. If you see those photographs, you see an extraordinary range of women in age, in size, in levels of trauma, participating in these protests, and they have managed to have serious impact. We're not talking about Vladimir Putin throwing out a sideline or stuff. We're talking about shutting an oil refinery down for over a week. The naked protest. That's real power, and that is proper agency. But when we start looking at Fremen as the sort of very very imperial white construct of what beauty is, what women is, and then exporting it while wiping out all consciousness, memory, experience, and agency of women of color, we tend to ignore these histories. And I think that's, for me, a more problematic area. There's another angle, and I do want to extend it. John Gray, who's a philosopher, a British philosopher, talks about secular heresies and how Enlightenment allowed Western Europe primarily, but by extension America, to disguise its biblical thinking and this sort of very Christian thinking in secular terms. So the underpinnings are still the same. And feminine is actually doing something quite simple. And it's very biblical in that sense. It's deciding that there is only one truth, so there is only one kind of feminism, to either go along with it, or you must be saved. This is not so different from the rhetoric that is practiced by right-wing evangelical Christians who go out to evangelize in India or Africa or Latin America. And I think that premise must be challenged. And I think as we move along, as we go into another generation of decolonized minds, this is where we're going to start seeing real resistance from indigenous communities, because people will start, these cultures will start resisting on those theoretical grounds, not just on simple, action. So I think there are multiple areas to consider, and I think it's very interesting that you want to point out how much men need to take into account. I think America especially perhaps needs to take into account that there is always going to be an intersection of race, nationality, religion, and various other elements. And there won't be a simple, straightforward answer. Guy with the white hat.
Well, let me ask you this, because one of the things that seems to pop up in the cafe conversations that I'm getting into with various people about this is that when I made some of the folks I've been speaking to for the past few days aware of the fact that there have been nude protests in Africa, the Americas, and especially in Southeast Asia, climates where you really don't need a lot of clothes, where the female body, the female figure is regarded as a sexual thing, but is also as a complete, it's just on a different level. Because, you know, they see, you know, each other exposed to a certain degree, they see each other's bodies on a regular basis. And that when non-European women are protesting in this way, that they're more protesting, and this is what's been coming out, that it seems that they're protesting more in terms of recognize my rights in terms of my gender, whereas feminine seems to be recognize my rights in terms of how I'm basically viewed sexually. Is there, how would you, in terms of the way Europeans look at females, as opposed to the way other cultures outside of Europe, outside of Western Europe, actually, let's say, because Eastern Europe would be a different situation, outside of Western Europe, how the woman in total, in terms of personality, in terms of beauty, in terms of the physical, in terms of, you know, a childbearing and what have you, you know, how cultures or how maybe we all, and I guess this is the confusion that I'm articulating here. How are we supposed to define this for those of us who are of color and in Western society when we come from cultures that look at women, I don't want to say better because I don't think that's objectively fair, but differently?
Well, I think you raise a good point. I think it also needs to be, we need to be very careful. The reason I say this, within Western Europe, women are seen quite differently, the female body is seen quite differently. So if you go from Italy to Sweden, the perception changes. More importantly and most problematic part of this is, of course, that very few cultures outside of Western Europe have been left untouched by imperial enterprise. So in some ways or the other, whether through history and direct colonialism or through mass media and export of mass media, we're all in some ways impacted. And yes, while it is true that cultures have different ways of viewing women, I think there is a great danger if we start to create binary, somehow non-Western cultures see women in more complete ways or not necessarily only sexual ways versus the Western one. There may be certain truth to some parts of it, but I think we do need to be very, very careful when we construct those generalizations. In case of women, I actually thought one of the statements made by their founder, which I thought was quite interesting, she said that the intervention with Putin in Germany was actually more provocative and more dangerous than the person who threw a shoe at George Bush. Now, when you think of that comparison, you realize that protesting a visiting leader in a country like Germany versus protesting George W. Bush in a country that is under occupation, in the territory of occupation, and coming to the conclusion that somehow the first was a greater act of courage, is a very, very dangerous idea, but in itself shows the intellectual, the intellectual poverty of these people. The absolute level of hubris that demands that, you know, that someone who's risking their life is somehow less than a woman stripping off in a fairly safe environment such as Germany.
Mm-hmm.
So I think those are issues that do need to be unbundled. And I don't have a problem with someone's to demand what they demand, but there are also multiple elements to it. If you even look at most Western societies and Western countries, both in Europe and in America, there are specific laws about dressing or undressing in public. So whether you like it or not, you as a man, if you decide to whip your trousers down in the middle of the tube or at a hotel, you will be arrested for indecent exposure. That's the reality of it. Sexualized or not sexualized. So to turn around and take what appears to be a very childish stance of somehow exposing women's breasts is an act of freedom because you are doing it in public in an area that is non-contextually linked to nudity or nakedness seems to me shock for its sake of shock. I don't think it serves a purpose. I don't think it's forward to date. I don't think it educates people about women's movement or indeed women's conditions elsewhere. I think it's on multiple levels. Practicality, strategy, tactic, even theory or philosophy does not fulfill any of the functions of standing up for women's rights. I don't even want to use the term feminist, but if this is meant to support women's rights, it doesn't. It's supposed to advance women's rights, it doesn't. All it does is it creates a sort of self-contained loop where a group of young women can be quite pleased with themselves in terms of setting themselves up as the self-proclaimed leader for feminism, world feminism, no less, and continue to be in the mainstream's eye by, continuous acts of provocation. I mean, they're not even real provocation. It's just sort of equivalent of tabloid press, you know, no different from, the paparazzi snapping a celebrity on a beach, with their top slip on. I do find that problematic. And the fact that they're getting so much coverage when women who have been fighting in countries in Africa, in the Middle East, in Asia, elsewhere, and Latin America for many, many decades and with a far greater degree of sincerity and dedication, that none seems to me is a conscious choice by much Western media to once again ignore the real struggle and focus on the light stuff, the peace stuff, which again positions in this case a group of white women as the heroines of sacred.
Mm-hmm. Well, let me ask you this as we go out here. What would you like to see in the international discussion in terms of women's rights? To not even think about feminine for a moment here, as an individual, what would you like to see raised in this discussion? And where would we go beyond discussion? Because talking about it doesn't really mean anything. What do we need to do?
Well, I think one of the things I would want to see is see more women of color being heard. I was looking at one of the surveys, recently media surveys from America, where apparently most talk shows the so-called experts who are primarily men and white men and often very old white men. And that says quite a lot about whose voices are being heard. Now, you can't change anything unless you're willing to hear what that change is going to be for the person. So unless we start hearing more women of color, unless we start saying, yes, what you have to say is valuable, yes, we are going to have to stop and listen rather than erase you by focusing on a blonde white woman's breast or by turning around and saying, you really don't know what you're talking about because you are oppressed, etc. I don't think those are very hard. So that's the first thing I would say, having more women of color speak. I think one of the things that Chimamanda Adichie said, the danger of a single story. And I think she makes it very well that point. The more stories you have, the more diversity of experiences that you include, the more likely you are to understand the complexities. And I think that's what I would like to see. Not just women of color saying the same thing, but women of color coming from different perspectives, different backgrounds, and being included in the debate. Beyond that, I think a lot of women are doing a lot of things already. I think I had an earlier discussion with a friend. We were talking of how in Western Europe and in America, the women's rights are under attack. And she's European and she felt quite stressed. As she said, the world is going backwards And I said, no, the world's not going backwards. Europe and America are losing leadership in yet another area. And that is also a historical process of decolonization. Women's rights are being fought for in different ways around the world. It's just that women are no of colors are no longer looking to Europe and America to lead them or even listen to what they have to say. And unless that gets through somehow, to these countries where we're going to be talking at each other rather than to each other.
Thank you. Because, you know, again, I'm a male. I want to be helpful. I want to understand what's going on. But, you know, for a lot of us who are caught up in the colonialism, you know, this is really hard to suss out. Okay, everyone, this has been Sunny Singh, the editor of Sunny Singh Online. She's one of the journalists that I've recently become aware of. She's worked in Mexico, Chile, South Africa, and other nations. And I really think you need to check out her work at sunnysingonline.blogspot.com. And you can also check her out on Twitter. Her address is there. You know, this is a discussion that should not end at this point. And I really hope after you've heard what she had to say and you are done listening to this podcast that you'll turn over to your neighbor and say, hey, look, you know, we need to talk about this. Because, I mean, as a man of color, I can tell you what it's like to be as a man of color, you know, under somebody's foot. But what about women of color? I mean, if we're having it bad, then you know full well our sisters are having it bad. Okay, this has been Intelligent Aboriginal Radio, and thank you, Sunny, for speaking with us.
Thank you very much.
Okay, please stay tuned. This is Intelligent Aboriginal Radio, media for intelligent Aborigines.
This is Intelligent Aboriginal Radio, Angry Indian Radio for the Fourth World.
Internet radio for smart Aboriginals.